Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor, Kristen McQueary.
That's right. You got it right this morning.
I did. I knew you had some position there at some point in time back.
Just say former, whatever.
Good to have you back. We pick up this morning where we left off yesterday. We told you that Jelly Belly was going to announce the reimposition of a mask mandate on public and private schools, K through 12. Throw in daycare centers, too. Yesterday afternoon, and that's precisely what he did. Why did he do it? Come on. Say it with him, won't you?
What we think is going to happen is that schools will follow this, do the right thing. Again, this is about keeping our children and their families safe.
Keeping our children and our families safe. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. What will be your response if your children, who you were expecting to have the option, your discretion, whether or not they were going to mask up, are now compelled to mask up by the governor? One District 41 parent, this is Glen Ellen, her name Lisa Che, had this to say.
I think the only way that this is going to stop is mass noncompliance.
Mass noncompliance. Kristen McQueary, the mother of school-age children, what say you?
I agree. I mean, so the governor's press conference yesterday, he's trying to put us back in the same position we were in March of last year. Just full of fear. This is a scary time. At one point, about a half hour into the press conference, he actually smacked his hand on the podium and said, "Go get vaccinated." I mean, it was militant. You could tell he was just so irritated that people are, choosing to not be vaccinated. And
irritated or performative?
I think there was real irritation there because even Ask Me, the state's largest employee union, is pushing back. And I mean, he's been so good to the employee union, as we know.
But the IEA, the teachers union, is cheerleading it.
Okay. Well, I mean, I suppose that's probably not surprising. They will use anything they probably can get to perhaps not return to in-person learning. If this is part of that puzzle, that would make sense. But we are not in the same place that we were in March of last year. And we know far more about this virus. We know more about masking. We know that schools are not super spreaders. We know that that vaccination, yes, is the path to being the most safe. But regardless, the death rates of COVID,
infection and survival.
Sure. I mean, we're not in the same place we were when we were staring down New York City and we were seeing, live video of people struggling to breathe and doctors talking about being overwhelmed and worried about ventilators, and people were going out onto their rooftops and applauding the healthcare workers as they change shifts. That's I understood. I was scared then too, but I'm tired of being scared now. And I do have kids in school. They both got vaccinated thinking that it would relieve them from having to wear masks. And they were really upset when I told them last night that your school is probably going to make you wear masks. Now, they're in private school, and I hope that the Archdiocese will fight this. I know. But it also doesn't make sense that if your kids are 12 and under, they're not eligible to be vaccinated. But if they're older, they are. And so I again just feel like we followed all the rules and now the goalposts just keep moving.
Indoor sports, too.
Right.
Got to wear masks. Not outdoor sports, which is what a concession that is. but indoor sports. I'm thinking maybe this doesn't go far enough.
Oh.
Because we've ceded private property so he can come into private schools and make this demand. Where else do kids congregate in groups? Indoors. Everywhere else. So daycare centers, yes. But there are other places, and they were not included in the diktat. And that should have those COVID enthusiasts very concerned, ostensibly, right? So, for example, how is Chuck E. Cheese not included? Where kids have birthday parties, and they will congregate for an extended period of time.
That ball pit is so full of germs. I mean, it's to be outlawed.
It's a virus vector.
Yes.
There's no question.
Yes.
So why not? Any indoor space, regardless of the activity, any place you find kids, you should find masked kids.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't you?
Yes.
I mean, I just want to follow the science, be a man of data, be saving grandma and grandpa. I'm thinking maybe we should start ritual sacrifices of children of the unvaccinated. Pay tribute to the god of science? Is that too far? Are we not ready for that yet?
It feels like it's coming.
What if I start with the white kids? Does that sell you?
Yes.
All right, very good.
Just be equitable about it, and yes, start with the white kids.
By the way, this op-ed, and this is a recent op-ed from two doctors at Mount Sinai in New York. We should never fully return to our maskless society where only healthcare providers donned a mask, because judicious use of masks will continue to save lives. Never.
I mean, I hear this, I'm sure you have too, from people who are obviously scared of getting sick from COVID, I understand, but also just scared of getting sick. We have this whole...
That's right.
I mean...
We can live in a world without sickness. We've got the right people in charge now. They can eradicate sickness.
I hear people say often, you know, I didn't even get a cold last year. No one in my family had stomach flu. And that's probably true because we were all staying home and there were no kids' sports and you weren't having sleepovers and you weren't doing the things. I don't think it was masks necessarily that led to that. But people believe that that's true. And so they don't even want to get a cold.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. It is believing that that's true in spite of the evidence. Do you want to run through the studies? Denmark. Duke, Mount Sinai, actually in conjunction with the U.S. military. We can run through them again for the umpteenth time. Happy to do it. So it is literally believing something akin to the ritual sacrifice of children to the gods. We have to please the gods. The god in this case is science.
What is the science as it relates to strengthening your immune system by actually getting sick? I mean, I don't know.
Right.
If you want to wear a mask, fine. I'm not one of these people who believes it's some political statement, or I think people wear them because they feel safer. For some of the reasons I just mentioned, they don't want to do anything that could lead to now just like a common cold. But I think, and maybe I'm wrong, and I think we're interviewing some people later, isn't it good for the immune system to get to have to fight off infections sometimes?
Yeah, especially for kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know.
Jeffrey Anderson, writing in a Claremont Review of Books on the Masking of America. The point of wearing masks is not to furnish oneself with an emotional crutch, but to prevent viral transmission. Many Americans have been taught to believe that masks work, at least a little, and that wearing them comes at minimal cost. Nearly the opposite is true. The best scientific evidence invites a far less rosy assessment of masks' effectiveness than is broadcast by public health officials, and the dubious health benefits of widespread mask wearing come at an enormous cost, which is almost never acknowledged by those writing and enforcing the mandates. Seeing and showing the face is a fundamental aspect of human existence. A society that forgets this straightforward truth will likely also fail to realize that faceless people may make for compliant subjects, but not generally for good citizens. And he goes on to also reference this fact. Surgical masks designed to protect patients' wounds from becoming infected by medical personnel, not to prevent the spread of viruses. With respect to the reaction, we have our own sort of local Ron DeSantis. His name is Keith Pikow, and he's the mayor of Orland Park. Here was his reaction yesterday, at least for the area where he has influence, meaning village government in Orland Park.
Any events that we have with children that the village is responsible for, we will not be requiring masks.
Can't control the schools, not his purview, but for village events, Orland Park, that involve kids, no masks requirement. And so that there's another area. Why not impose this on villages, too, that have, you know, family events, child events,
sure
anything indoors, you know, masks, right?
I'm sure it's coming. I mean, that's what is just so offensive about what he did yesterday. And I really felt that it had the flavor of, you know what, Governor, you haven't been on CNN in a while. Let's do something bold. It just had this, the timing is odd. Again, we just got out of Lollapalooza. I cannot get past that.
Mm-hmm.
We just had 400,000 people congregating in downtown Chicago. And by the way, did you see Dr. Arwadi went undercover?
Yeah.
There's a story about that. So you're not credible anymore. You're not credible if you are saying we can have these huge outdoor body-to-body events like that, and yet schools, which have shown no evidence of being super spreaders, you're going to put masks on everybody.
You may not be credible to the critical thinker, but I'm sorry to inform you that's not a majority. And you're also credible enough for the frightened and those that have folded into the state to go along. This is the statement that was issued by Michael Boyle, who's the superintendent of Catholic schools for the Joliet Diocese. Blah, blah, blah. He announced this thing during the 2020-2021 academic year. The diocese followed scientific mitigation guidelines offered by CDC. These efforts allowed our schools to successfully conduct in-person learning with masks. The safety of our students remains a top priority, along with providing academic excellence, guided by Catholic values. To comply with the mandate, we will require masks for all students, teachers, staff, and visitors in Catholic schools for the 2021-22 academic year.
Wow, that goes farther than what the governor said.
For the entire year? It's a done deal. To comply with the mandate, we will require masks all students, teachers, staff, and visitors in our Catholic schools for the 2021-22 academic year. That's what his statement says. Michael Boyle. Where's Father Belmonte when you need him? The former superintendent of Catholic schools in the Joliet Diocese. Oh, I know. He's in Florida. Because
right.
That's where he went.
Well, you know where I might have to move? Back to good old hometown of Rockford.
Really?
Because the archdiocese there, it is not the part of the Chicago archdiocese, they are not requiring children to wear masks in schools. Now, this was this was announced before the governor's mandate, but at least maybe you'll get some pushback from that archdiocese.
It's what that Glenn Ellen mom said about the only thing to do is to defy at this point. And I continue to be astounded by the cowardice of the church to which I affiliate, the faith to which I affiliate, the leaders of that faith, the Catholic Church. I mean, yeah, I get Supich is a politician, but up and down the line, it is sickening to see people who are supposed to be willing to martyr themselves in defense of the truth fold into the state. And that's what they're doing. I honestly wonder, and this I'll start with Michael Boyle there in the Joliet Diocese. If the state demanded that you renounce your faith out of an abundance of caution to save lives, would you do it? Because I think half these people would. Sickening. Keith and Kankakee.
Yeah, good morning. I agree. Mass defiance is the only way to stop this thing. If JB's going to threaten with defunding or de-credentializing schools, I say call bluff. Do it. I'd love to see that headline. You know, school district, whatever, is defunded because they will not wear masks. I would love to see it.
I would, too. I totally agree. Call the bluff. It's a great point. Absolutely.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J this morning, Kristen McQuarrie, former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor. We're talking about Jelly Belly's pronouncement yesterday mask mandate for all kids K through 12, public and private, as well as daycare centers and indoor sports. Rand Paul's op-ed in Fox at foxnews.com. Resist. They can't arrest us all. They can't keep all your kids home from school. They can't keep every government building closed, although I've got a long list of the ones they should. We don't have to accept the mandates, lockdowns, and harmful policies of the petty tyrants and feckless bureaucrats. We can simply say no, not again. Are you going to say no, not this time, when it comes to the mask mandate for your kids in school? Go ahead. Suspend my kid. Go ahead. Expel my kid. Let's go. Let's go the distance on this one.
Well, and the governor said, when asked that question at the press conference, what if schools rebel? He said there would be liability issues if they object, and that the State Board of Education can, quote, remove recognition status for schools. And he said, you know, I hope it doesn't come to that. But
oh, of course not.
Right.
Please don't force my hand. Don't make me.
You know, nobody.
I've got this gun to your head. Please don't make me pull the trigger. Okay.
I'm pretty sure you can't hear the questions at the press conferences because the reporters don't walk up to the mic. I don't know that he got a single question about just what an overreach this is into local government territory.
Why would he get a question from his comm shop? They've already decided what the policy is going to be. And so they're just there to be window dressing.
Someone may have asked it, but I couldn't hear the questions, and he didn't seem to address it.
So go ahead. Go ahead. Attack the school of a particular community that says no. Do it. If I was that community, if I was on that school board, if I was that superintendent, go ahead. Send your feckless bureaucrats, to borrow a Rand Paulism, from Springfield to our school, and you go ahead and de-recognize us. I'll have all my friends waiting for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if part of this will be, if they're trying to catch school districts, if they will start, you know,
this is
sending people into.
This is press release politics, which is so much of COVID has been, is we make an announcement. I've checked that box. We don't have any ability to enforce. I don't even have that much desire to enforce because it just creates more work for me. So much of this is press release politics, contact tracing. You know, you have to quarantine when you come back from Florida. Oh, really? Were there a vaccine or COVID ambassadors to take you home or to some hotel to quarantine when you got back from Florida in Chicago? Obviously not. It's press release politics. But even if it isn't, so what? Either way, we're calling your bluff. And by the way, I'm not just talking about schools because he just talked about schools. I'm talking about parents, individual children.
Well, especially those parents who have been going to school board meetings, super engaged in this topic for months, perhaps were successful in convincing their district, their school boards, to not mask or to leave it up to parent discretion. And now the governor just swooped over all of their work in trying to deliver their message.
Right. So, I mean, how many times do we ask this question about policies in Chicago and Illinois? So what will you do about it? What will you do? Carl in Frankfurt, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to let you guys know my thought behind this is I believe the teachers' unions are behind this mask mandate again.
Well,
that's what my thought is.
Well, they're certainly supportive of it. Thanks for the call, Carl. So Jelly Belly knows he has the teachers' unions have his prodigious back. There's no question. And as you said, Kristen, you know, anything to negotiate the terms of my employment after the fact, any opportunity to do that, the teachers unions will take it.
Oh, I mean, there's another story out today about some union member lecturing everyone about being safe and, you know, doing it from like a beach somewhere. You know, don't travel. Remember that story with the Sarah Chambers CTU member who was tweeting out that teachers needed to band together and be safe, and she was doing it from like a poolside in Puerto Rico or something.
Yes, I'll
right?
have another margarita. Hold on a second. Brian in Oak Forest, he's been one of the individuals engaged in the fight for his kids in that district. Brian?
Hey, good morning, Dan. I've been saying this since March or April of 2020. That this nonsense only stops when the people say stop. The people run the government, not the government run the people. You've been helpful. I'm trying. If I was a board member on District 146, I would 100% be saying, pound sand, we ain't doing it. You see my emails. I'm telling them they're all cowards as a whole. I'm telling them they need to stand up and have some courage. It's not getting me anywhere, but I'm trying. So,
all right, keep the fight.
My next fight is I found some pictures on the wall at Central Junior High in Tinley Park that were all related to critical race theory. So on Monday when I speak, it's going to be less about the mask because obviously they know my opinion and I don't think they're going to budge anyway. But I'm going to ask them about why those pictures are on the wall. So that's how I spend my 3 minutes on Monday.
Thanks.
So I got it. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Tony in Downers Grove.
Yes, so this week it's the mask in school, but next week it's going to be our more arbitrary rules because it's indoor sports mask, but then it's going to be you can't attend those indoor events, and then it's going to be outdoor events have restrictions on capacities, and then we're going to move forward to lockdowns. Meanwhile, Biden's going to come out and talk about how he's just for the good of the people. And where are the Republicans in this outside of Rand Paul and Ron DeSantis sitting on the sidelines? And it's a bigger issue than just mask at school in schools. This is, you know, and it gets down to the vaccines. They're not mandating vaccines, but businesses are forcing people to take vaccines. I don't see this stopping anytime soon because another pandemic's right around the corner.
Thanks for the call, Tony. I agree generally with Tony's sentiment. Look, when the vaccines are inevitably approved for emergency use for kids under the age of 12, what's to stop them from Jelly Belly from doing the same thing? Public and private schools, in order to attend in person, you shall be vaccinated.
Is there no, let me back up. For people who haven't had a kid in the last probably 10 years, might be surprised at how long the list of vaccination is for kids now. I mean, it is endless. Mm-hmm. It is endless. The booster shots, the chicken pox, the, I mean, everything. And there are exemptions. You can take a religious exemption. I'm sure you get ostracized and you're frowned upon if you do it. But is there any sort of exemption even being discussed for COVID for kids? Can you take a religious exemption?
Well, yeah. I mean, this has been litigated. This is being litigated. It will continue to be litigated depending on how companies, for example, private actors are going about their mandates, depending on how universities, for example, are going about their mandates. If you don't provide for a health exemption and a religious exemption, then you do have some exposure. There's no question. But generally, what if you just say, I don't want to do it. I mean, I don't want my kid to do it. I don't feel comfortable. That's not an exemption. So then what do? When the state says you have to take this vaccination that's only emergency use authorized, right? We still don't expect formal authorization until January. And, oh, by the way, a lot of data is piling up since then. I'm not saying that it's not generally safe. There's no hysteria here. I don't need to overstate the case. That's what the COVIDians do. Just saying that I don't feel comfortable. This is not a threat. The adverse outcomes were such that the FDA mandated warning labels on the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines for myocarditis. So why, if my kid has virtually no chance of getting seriously ill, much less dying, should I take that chance when the chance of an adverse outcome from a COVID infection appears to be less?
Right. Or if you are someone who your kid already had COVID, lots of teenagers will be in that boat.
The flu shot is not mandated to go to school.
No, it isn't. But
this is less threatening to kids than the flu.
Right.
So explain that.
It's just, you know, if the anti-vaxxers are always labeled as, you know, these crazy people, and they're not, and they should be listened to. My kids are fully vaccinated. However, I did not vaccinate them on the schedule that they want you to. I mean, my first child was out of my body about maybe 24 hours, maybe not even.
That is vivid. Thank you for that description.
I'm going to keep going.
Please.
Okay? Gird yourself.
Yes. You're not going to talk about the afterbirth, are you?
I could.
No.
But, you know, you have this fragile little newborn baby, bleary-eyed and getting her lungs adjusted to being, you know, outside. And they wanted to do some sort of vaccination in her foot. I think it was for like hepatitis B or something to prevent her from getting sick in the hospital. And I said, no, like you're not putting something in her body. She's a tiny little fragile being, but it starts there and it just goes on and on and on. And so when they wanted to vaccinate, I did not allow them to double up when I took them to the doctor, you know, you can't do two at a time. And I delayed so that their bodies were a little bit bigger. They were a little bit older. But even the pushback that I got from my pediatrician in doing that was pretty substantial. There's so much pressure to just do whatever the doctors say and to vaccinate. So I get it about all of this media pressure. And so if you don't want to get the COVID vaccine, you get labeled as, you know, just absolutely kooky. But it's not. These are huge decisions for parents, and they're really hard to make.
Take a few more calls. Bill in Lincoln Park.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Mrs. McQuarrie. I swear this governor is probably either a Republican plant who's trying to recruit women, or he's got to be stupid. I mean, Humpty Dumpty, I mean, I'm watching the videos from Homer Township, Lockport, Plainfield, mostly suburban or rural areas of school board meetings and city council meetings, and women are showing up, and they're irritated, and a lot of them are talking about running for school board, and they're just... You know, I recognize one of them who used to live in Lincoln Park, now married with a few kids in the suburbs, and she's going like a dragon. And so a lot of these women, I can't blame them for, they're upset about the mask situation, the different critical learning and all these kind of items in school. Yeah, they're going to run for school board now, but, I mean, in a couple of years, the Democrats are going to be wondering, where did all these Republican women come from running for Congress and Senate probably 10, 15 years from now? And I swear this governor is doing this. I mean, I don't know if the governor ever watched Mutual Omaha Wild Kingdom, but what happens when these guys walk between a bear and the cubs, or the mother eagle and the little baby eagle in the nest? I mean, they go animal berserk. That's what mothers do.
We do. I'm with you. Yep.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bill. Matt in Lake Geneva.
Hey, good morning.
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 I had one topic, but I'll make it two real quick ones. When you started talking about the Catholic churches and the mass, that kind of goes against my 46 years of being a Catholic. If you're going to live in fear and run around in a plastic bubble in a hazmat suit, afraid to live your life, you got to really get in touch with God and just take what life gives you, you know? So I think that's ridiculous. And secondly, us in Wisconsin, we're watching very carefully Bag of Donuts Pritzker and Witless Whitmire, because we've got a clueless governor who couldn't fight his way out of a wet paper bag if I give him basically a letter opener and instructions on the inside. And he's going to do exactly what those two other blue state governors do. And it makes us very, very nervous when Whitmire and Pritzker start doing that nonsense. And there is no exit strategy. This is going to continue until we put our foot down, we take our schools back, get engaged in our kids' schools and our local politics. And it's not from the top down, it's from the bottom up. We got to start local and work our way towards the White House, because you're not going to do it the other direction. And thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Well, the difference between Illinois and Wisconsin and Michigan, at least you have a Republican-controlled state legislature that is pushing back against the Ava Prone of East Lansing as well as Evers in Madison. At least you have that going for you. We don't have that. On the Catholic thing, it's a great point you make. In addition to so many Catholic faith leaders serving as sentinels of the state rather than the truth, the idea that, right, the idea that they're essentially promoting is, this is all there is, the mortal coil. I mean, they're not saying it, but, what's heaven for? Matthew, what's his name? Boyle over at the Joliet Archdiocese? Is there an afterlife? Superintendent Boyle? Or is this all there is? Because you're acting like it's the latter, aren't you? 99.8% survival rate. Are you serious? Are you an adult? Much less a faith leader? Speaking of faith leaders, a Twitter account, Erasmus of Rotterdam, I don't believe it's the actual Christian scholar.
I think that's probably a fake account. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he made it to the 21st century. This is fun for vaccine mandates. Here's a little trick to apply, perhaps in your workplace, and maybe on behalf of your kid when vaccine mandates come to the schools. I made it clear through my lawyer that I would begin to demand the status of all other employees' health condition in regards to other forms of communicable diseases. We would be demanding information on employees with AIDS, hepatitis, flu, STDs, measles, mumps, and so on. My lawyer already had the papers drawn up so I could serve him the first day he tried it, and part of the suit would be to force the company to make immediate policies to section off employees who had any illness they could spread, including the common cold. If they were going to take responsibility in stopping the spread of COVID in the building, they were not liable for the spread of anything else. Within 24 hours, we were all informed that they would no longer demand to see our papers.
Your papers, please.
Yeah. Oh, you love doing
that impersonation. I do. It's so much fun.
Yeah, I like that. Would it stop the spread of COVID? This is a big science project here at work. Great. I assume you've met my attorney. He's got some other ideas, and if you don't want to implement these ideas, then we'll see you in court. Wouldn't that be fun? It may not be popular in the lunchroom for a few days, but somebody has to again highlight the absurdity by being absurd, and this is a great way to do it. It's right on point.
I mean, what if you sneeze or cough? There has to be like a fine associated with that now, or you have to be shoved into a separate room immediately.
Yeah, but to Erasmus's, our friend Erasmus over here, the Dutch philosopher, to his point, if we're going to section off people based on communicable virus, then again, start with the flu and work your way all the way up.
Right? I know my mind is wandering at all the possibilities.
How about it, Chris and Carrie?
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Kristen. Hey, Dan, real quick, I played up at Strawberry Creek yesterday. It was fantastic.
Strawberry Creek? Where's that?
The golf course.
No, where is it? Where is it?
Where? Oh, Kenosha.
Oh, okay. All right, I haven't played that.
Fantastic, great course.
After playing Flossmoor yesterday, I'm thinking about giving up the game and starting pickleball. But I appreciate the recommendation, nonetheless.
No problem. So we have in our community a lot of armchair outrage. What I mean by that is a lot of people are outraged and they talk to each other, but they don't communicate to the board, the school board. So, for example, in our last, people show up to the meeting, but only it's only the meeting that they make the decision or make the announcement. They don't go to the meetings leading up to that. They're not sending emails. In fact, one of the board members stated that those in favor of the mask mandate outnumbered 8-1 those in opposition. So we can't be too outraged if our outrage is only at home and we're keeping silent. Go to the meetings, let your voice be heard at the meeting, send emails, make phone calls.
Thanks for the call, Chris.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQuarrie. Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, America's governor as far as I'm concerned. I know for the left it's Andrew Cuomo, and hey, you can have him. How's it going? For conservatives, it's Ron DeSantis, and I don't even think it's close in terms of any other governor. And his response to Biden's, comply or get out of the way missive is why DeSantis is America's governor for people who want to live in a free society. Here's what Biden had to say to governors not falling in line with his administration's edicts, specifically referencing DeSantis and Abbott in Texas.
Florida and Texas account for 1/3 of all new COVID-19 cases in the entire country. Just two states. Look, we need leadership from everyone. If some governors aren't willing to do the right thing to beat this pandemic, then they should allow businesses and universities who want to do the right thing to be able to do it. I say to these governors, please help. But if you aren't going to help, at least get out of the way.
Agree with me or be rolled over, which is always the left's posture. Ron DeSantis responding yesterday.
Joe Biden has taken to himself to try to single out Florida over COVID. This is a guy who ran for president saying he was going to, quote, shut down the virus. And what has he done? He's imported more virus from around the world by having a wide open southern border. You have hundreds of thousands of people pouring across every month. And it's not just from Mexico. In fact, it's rarely from Mexico. You have over 100 different countries where people are pouring through. Not only are they letting them through, they're then farming them out all across our communities across this country, putting them on planes, putting them on buses. Do you think they're being worried about COVID for that? Of course not. So he's facilitating. Who knows what new variants are out there, but I can tell you whatever variants are around the world, they're coming across that southern border. And so he's not shutting down the virus. He's helping to facilitate it in our country.
He's really good. And you know why that answer is so good? Because it's the sort of jujitsu you never hear from Republicans. Oh, you want to come at me? Well, not only will I take your incoming, I've got some outgoing. Who's really not serious about stopping the spread, slowing the spread of COVID? It's actually you, Mr. President, because of the southern border. A question that was put to Rochelle Walensky, CDC director, by Brett Baer on Friday night, last Friday night, and she sort of mumbled her way through it. Oh, I don't know that people across the border illegally being released in this country. I don't know that they're the proximate cause of the spike in cases in border states. You know, but I don't, you know, she's sort of typically vague about it, because how does that make any sense? How does that make any sense? You're so, all of these orders, you got de Blasio with the vaccine mandates and the, and, you know, and trying to set those unvaccinated out of civil society, and mask mandates from Jelly Belly here and so on and so forth. And yet the border, what's it been? 1.8 million since Biden took office. But you're serious about stopping the spread, just like you're serious about stopping the spread. But last summer, it didn't matter when Black Lives Matter was laying waste to America's cities. But you're serious about it, except when it's a political ally or it's part of your larger political agenda that you don't want to talk about. And then DeSantis follows up with the appropriate ridicule.
And what is his big solution? What is he so upset about Florida? His solution is he wants to have the government force kindergartners to wear masks in school. He doesn't believe the parents should have a say in that. He thinks that should be a decision for the government. Well, I can tell you in Florida, the parents are going to be the ones in charge of that decision.
So here's the thing. So great, great juxtaposition. Open the borders, say, please don't come, but if you come, we're not going to do anything about it, which has been the administration's posture. And meanwhile, you're going to come down hard on kindergartners.
Well, the same could be applied to Governor Pritzker. I mean, they are using this Delta variant as a way to scare everyone that we need to reinstitute, or, you know, he's swooping over local government, local control to insist on masks as schools open and using this variant. But these cases aren't divided up by, regular COVID versus Delta. So, yes, there has been a slight increase in COVID cases in Illinois, but there's no way to tell if it's the Delta variant. From what I know, is there a test? Is there some sort of medical way that you can distinguish between the two? And also, I'm looking at some of Illinois' most recent data. Deaths are down or flat. I mean, we're in the single digits here. But this is enough for the governor to insist on a mandate. And as I said earlier.
On the comparison of Pritzker to Biden. And then Pritzker just signed the Trust Act, eliminating local government's ability to collaborate with ICE as it pertains to people in this country illegally. So it's very analogous because he has the same open border policy to the extent that that policy impacts Illinois that Joe Biden and the Biden administration are taking writ large.
Yes, and he was very close but decided it would be too politically treacherous to attend Lollapalooza. But again, I'm just going to keep harping on it. We just had a huge 400,000 crowd of people in downtown Chicago approved, signed off on, encouraged by our political leaders. And now our kids have to wear masks in school. There's just no credibility anymore behind their claims.
Well, Dr. Senator Rand Paul on the Delta variant.
Now, they're all freaking out right now about the Delta variant. One thing is, in all likelihood, true. It is more transmissible, significantly more transmissible. But guess what? Every bit of evidence shows that it's less deadly, significantly less deadly. Public Health England looked at 92,000 people. If you were vaccinated and under 50, there were no deaths. If you were unvaccinated and under 50, 0.08%, still very, very small. So it's not an argument for not getting vaccinated. It's an argument for not getting hysterical over the Delta variant. We shouldn't be changing any mandates. And really, in all likelihood, the mask didn't affect the trajectory of the virus at all. The only thing that's slowing the virus down is the vaccine and natural immunity.
Mm-hmm. And on the border issue, I mean, just to understand DeSantis's point in particular, that also applies to Pritzker, as you rightly pointed out, Kristen. The comparison applies. Here's DHS Secretary Mayorkas on March 19th. You know, as this situation at the border, it was a challenge, not a crisis, right?
We well understand that out of desperation, some children might not wait. Some loving parents might send their child to traverse Mexico alone to reach the southern border, our southern border. I hope they don't undertake that perilous journey, but if they do, we will not expel that young child. We will care for that young child and unite that child with a responsible parent. That is who we are as a nation, and we can do it.
Don't leave, please come.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave, please come. Send your kids, we'll take care of them. Mayorkas this week with Mrs. Alan Greenspan emoting in lieu of offering substantive policy commentary on the personal difficulty of repelling Cuban political refugees because of, you know, his own family history.
So this is a very difficult topic for me personally. My family lost everything they had in Cuba, and we came here to the United States. And look where I am. Look where I am now. It's
an amazing personal story.
It's the power of America.
Yeah.
The message that I communicated, the message that our administration is communicating is, one, we stand with the Cuban people. We deplore the repression that the authoritarian regime is exercising against the Cuban people. But we also deliver a message of humanity, which is do not take to the seas. You know, in 2 weeks' time, we rescued many, many families that tried to do that, and we saw 20 deaths occur in just a couple weeks. It's a perilous journey. It's an unsafe journey. And there's an orderly way to seek relief under United States law, and taking to the seas is not it.
Do you think there could be some way to let people in legally, to let more Cubans in if they, judging from the protests, if they now want to leave?
Well, we accept claims for asylum through the ports of entry. That is the safe, orderly, and humane way to proceed.
He is scum. He's a disgrace to the oppression his family fled. Really? You came here, your family escaped. Thank God they did for them and for you, so that you can now be a spokesbeing for the same path to the elimination of freedom. I mean, are you kidding? the remain in country policy. Gosh, where have I heard that before? I guess that was the policy of the racist, hateful, xenophobic prior president. Wasn't that? We have a process for applying for political asylum, and you do it through ports of entry. You remain in country pending your application. Wasn't that the policy of the Trump administration that was decried as inhumane? And now Mayorkas is all, you know, he's found religion because of Cuba, and they have to take this rhetorical position that they're opposed to Cuban oppression. By the way, now people are trying to flee Cuba. No, they've been trying to flee Cuba and have successfully fled Cuba. Ali, your parents, for the last 60 years, ever since Castro took power. Isn't that true? Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. These people are embarrassments. And again, to have that family experience and then to serve in the capacity he's serving and recite the hypocritical and ignorant talking points of this administration, it's just disgraceful. These people have no pride. No pride. It is just all about status and power at any cost. And other people are just means to political ends. I don't know how, I don't know if there's a better illustration of it than DHS Secretary Mayorkas. Pathetic. What a sad little man he is. Rand Paul and Ron DeSantis. So now that we understand the Biden administration importing virus, the big idea to stop virus in country is kindergartners wearing masks. Great setup from DeSantis. And the question that DeSantis poses to the country and his answer to the question he poses.
And so I think the question is we can either have a free society or we can have a biomedical security state. And I can tell you, Florida, we're a free state. People are going to be free to choose to make their own decisions about themselves, about their families, about their kids' education, and about putting food on the table. And Joe Biden suggests that if you don't do lockdown policies, then you should, quote, get out of the way. But let me tell you this. If you're coming after the rights of parents in Florida, I'm standing in your way. I'm not going to let you get away with it. If you're trying to deny kids a proper in-person education, I'm going to stand in your way, and I'm going to stand up for the kids in Florida. If you're trying to restrict people, impose mandates, if you're trying to ruin their jobs and their livelihoods and their small business, if you are trying to lock people down, I am standing in your way, and I'm standing for the people of Florida. So why don't you do your job? Why don't you get this border secure? And until you do that, I don't want to hear a blip about COVID from you. Thank you.
Bring it. Bring it. You can choose the de Blasio path of the biomedical state and the other COVIDian enthusiasts, ideologues, acolytes, or you can choose the path that Florida is taking.
But if you don't have a governor like DeSantis, it really is up to parents. And the April school board elections, at least in suburban Cook County, were really disappointing in that some of the parents who were running on platforms of, you know, get kids back in school, this was more in-person learning versus Zoom learning. Some of them were not elected. They were just.
I know, we profiled a lot of them on this show.
They were tacked as being, you know, white supremacists,
right,
and they had Facebook groups going after them. It was absolutely insane. And you had superintendents and school board members getting, you know, in heated arguments and getting involved and spreading lies about some of these candidates. So I don't know if it was as a result of that or not, but there were fewer candidates who ran for school board this year than the 4 year mark previous.
No.
So, and one of the candidates who ran, she posed this question in an op-ed. This was just in April, but it applies now. She said, "Why aren't more parents fighting for their children's well-being? After all, the Facebook group formed to push for reopening locally," this was in her northwest suburban area, "has 1,300 members. Surely other Facebook groups for other districts have similarly active and concerned parents. Are the sharers all merely keyboard warriors? Are they afraid of retaliation? Do they believe there's nothing they can do, or they don't know how to get involved? Or have the parents who care the most simply given up and transferred their children to private schools or made plans to move away?
All of the above.
Yes, exactly. But now the governor has even usurped the autonomy that private schools should have, and the reason a lot of parents send their kids to private schools, by instituting this mandate that, I don't know, was this an executive order? Is it a mandate? Is anyone going to challenge it? We are not in the emergency situation we were a year and a half ago. So it should be challenged. And in fact,
do you hear any, I mean, I'm asking you too. You cover the beat for a long time. Do you hear any Republican in the state?
No.
Speaking the way that Ron DeSantis speaks?
Well,
any Republican office holder?
Darren Bailey.
Darren Bailey's about it.
State senator running for governor.
Yeah, that's about it. One guy.
That's about it. And he is, you know, continually ridiculed and the media thinks he's a clown, which is terribly unfair. But yeah, he's probably the only one that I can point to.
Teresa on the north side.
Good morning, Dan and Kristen. I was listening to the news earlier this morning before Morning Answer came on, and maybe I missed this one, but I thought I heard now it's the Delta Plus that's coming out of Korea. Did you guys hear this?
Yeah, I got, let me check my scorecard. We got Epsilon, we got Gamma, we got Delta Plus. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well,
the Delta Plus, and what's going to be next? The Delta Plus Max, there's no way in hell you'll survive this.
Yeah, it's like game consoles. You know, they're going to keep coming out with new generations of. Well, thanks for the culture. Yeah, right. Again, this just in, things you learn in biology 101, viruses mutate. Medical professionals said that from the outset, that we knew this was going to happen. But let's just pretend we didn't. Every time, for every variant.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. this morning is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQuarrie. And we learned the other day that all this business of nipple rings Gambino there in New York is just a matter. It's a generational difference. It's cultural. This is just his way.
It's a sign of warmth.
It is. Yes,
all the unwanted advances are just signs of love and affection.
Right. He does it with everyone. Bus drivers, LGBTQ, Inuit Eskimos. Everyone gets the same treatment from Handsy Andy. So that's what we learned. We also learned that it's all just politics.
Yes.
Just people with a political axe to grind, like apparently all of his fellow Democrats, starting with the attorney general. Just politics. 165-page report with all these details. Just politics. The 11 women. Just politics.
Okay. And lies. He also said lies.
And also his failure, you know, consistent with his messianic complex. He tried too much. He cares so much about sexual assault survivors that he tried to help Charlotte Bennett with her healing from her sexual assault.
By hitting on her.
In college. Right. Well, that's how she took it, clearly. But you know, hey, if he tried to help too much, he pleads guilty. He pleads guilty to helping too much, to caring too much. Oh, and then also, hey, look, now that I've said all that and addressed all of the accusations, we don't have time for this anymore because we still got to battle the COVID beast. And you don't forget, I'm America's governor when it comes to fighting COVID. I've got the International Emmy to prove it.
He must have really hated the mask mandates because he couldn't just get those lip-to-lip interactions with New Yorkers of all stripes.
Well, he did. I mean, remember him apparently hitting on the nurse that gave him the nose swab.
Right. We forgot about that.
Yeah.
While he's getting his COVID test, he tells, it was a doctor, a female doctor, that she made that gown look good.
Yeah. He's got amazing game. He is so good at banter. I can't now, the updating the story, I can't figure out which story I enjoy the most. It came out yesterday. From the Poynter Institute, one of these phony baloney vanguards of journalism that was silent up until now. Don't blame Chris Cuomo for his brother's actions. Blame him for his own actions. Wow.
Boom. How brave.
That's so powerful. And the timing, too. Stepping out at this point.
Wow.
Is it
courageous.
Safe?
Courageous.
Or this one. I think this is my favorite. The Time's Up co-founders helped Governor Cuomo in drafting a letter attacking the first accuser, who is now suing the governor's staff, Lindsay Boylan. They helped him draft the letter attacking her after she made the accusation. The people that run around hashtagging women are to be believed. Roberta Kaplan, who co-founded the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, along with CEO of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, one Tina Chen. Tina Chen, where have I heard that name before?
Former chief of staff.
Yeah, to one Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Tina Chen, you may remember, was in the news a couple of years ago when a certain French actor named Jussie Smollett was alleged to have been a victim of a hate crime. Tina Chen reached out to Kim Fox on behalf of Jussie. And we don't really know what exactly was said. We don't really know the nature of that still, all this time later. But that was Tina Chen, Michelle Obama's chief of staff, reaching out ex parte to Kim Fox on Jussie Smollett's prosecution.
Right. We know that after that conversation, however, the 16 charges were suddenly dropped against him in a court hearing that had not been announced. And that reach out has never been fully revealed. There was a special prosecutor. Much of the case, the judge has allowed to be redacted. What was discovered, and so we still don't know.
I'll tell you what, if Cuomo can take down both his brother as well as these hypocritical political operatives masquerading as, you know, women's advocates, then, you know, perhaps it will all have been worth it. I mean, not for the women who accused him of inappropriate behavior, but I think you get my point here. The exposure of people who hide behind these hashtags and ostensibly along with their friends in the press corps, the comm shop for the left, present themselves as, again, these great guardians of all that is good and right, these beacons of light in America, to show them for the craven little people that they really are. For more on all this, we're pleased to be joined again by David Marcus, political reporter for The New York Post, author of Charade, The COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation. David, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So Governor Cuomo there seems destined to take the window instead of the stairs, as now those Democrat socialists in the assembly who were just playing press release politics 3 months ago are compelled to impeach and remove him.
Yeah, it looks that way. You guys also, you missed the best excuse, which is, I don't know about Chicago, but here in New York, we have these people called Italians.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And you really got to watch yourself, because they'll just grab you and start kissing you, and it's, you know.
He learned it from his parents,
Yes, you know, he's driving around on a scooter with a bottle of Chianti. you know, it looks like they're going to impeach and remove him, but I will believe it when I see it. Right now, about 75% of the state legislators have called for him to either resign or to be impeached or whatever. That means 25% haven't. That's in the neighborhood of what he needs to survive this. The last 2 days have been giant news days on this. In terms of the news cycle, we all know 3 days from now we will have moved on to something else. My sense is that he's going to be working with legislators, to try to do something along the lines of, why don't we do censure, right? It's some kind of a compromise. I think he's got at least a 20-25% chance that he could pull something like that off. So we'll see how it goes, but But yeah, right now it looks bad, but we've all been in this business long enough to know what a few days can do, away from a scandal.
Well, if
as
he
does well, Northam.
Northam, that is a good example. But I mean, if he survives, boy, he's a real albatross, because you've had all the national Democrats all the way to the President of the United States weigh in as well. So it makes them look impotent and unable to police their own party.
Yeah, I think they are to some extent, and this speaks to a sort of broader issue about how political power works now, because there was certainly a time when this kind of thing meant, you just resigned. You just had to get out of the way. We don't live in that world anymore, and I think there's upsides and downsides to it, right? I think in the case of Brett Kavanaugh, for example, under the old rubric, Kavanaugh doesn't survive what happens during his hearings and stuff. Not because he's guilty or he's innocent, but just because, there's a whiff of scandal, let's move on to somebody else. I mean, there was a Supreme Court nominee, I think it was in the early 90s, who basically got yanked because he admitted to smoking marijuana.
Ginsburg,
right?
Ginsburg.
So, I mean, we don't live in that world anymore. And like I said, there's upsides to that and downsides to that, but it's not how things are anymore.
What if criminal charges unfold? I mean, does that change the dynamic? I'm looking at a poll this morning. This is from Yahoo, but 59% of New Yorkers, this is just New Yorkers, obviously, but only 59% think he should quit. To your point, that means there are a lot of people who are still sticking with him. Do you think, if this becomes a criminal case, that would change?
Yes, I do. But I also think it has to do, again, with the timing, right? I think that if you can keep a steady drumbeat up until the point when the legislature has to make its decision, then it's far more likely that he goes. If things go quiet and he's able to sort of operate behind the scenes, then I think it's a little different. But I was interested in that poll too, and going back to the case of Ralph Northam, who's the Virginia governor, who was, they found photographs of either him in blackface or in a Klan outfit. He was one of the two guys, right? I remember thinking, like, this guy's going. Like, obviously, he's got to go. And there was a similar poll. I think it was a little better than that, but a similar poll that I saw, and I was like, wow, he might survive this. And look, one of the things that we have to deal with here in New York is Letitia James is not an impartial actor here, right? She wants to be governor. She's extremely progressive. And there is an extent to which New Yorkers look at this, and as frustrated as many of us have been with Cuomo, kind of think like this could be worse, right? So there's a lot of political dynamics that are playing out here.
I read this piece from Elizabeth Spires in the New York Times, how Cuomo could get away with this for so long. She's a digital strategist for the Democrat socialists. And I just laughed and laughed. The dissociation that happens when these things occur from the operative set. Elizabeth Spires, how he got away with this for so long. And then she recounts how everybody knew these things about him for so long. And, his Machiavellian politics and his machismo had a certain appeal. And then the fawning over by the press and so on and so forth. I mean, a wonderful breakdown of how people like Cuomo exist and thrive in politics because of people like Elizabeth Spires writing this breakdown.
Yeah, look, absolutely. Between Governor Cuomo and his dad, somebody named Cuomo has been governor of New York for half my life, and I'm pretty old. So this is, this is a powerful family here in New York, very deeply embedded into the Democratic Party machine. And I do think to some extent you're seeing reflected some of the tensions in the Democratic Party today, where these machines are starting, especially on the state and local level, to lose power to groups like Justice Democrats, to groups like the Squad, to these progressives who have been able, in some cases, to take advantage of things like anti-corruption laws, but also are just really good and smart at small local elections. And they don't like Cuomo. So, you know, that's a war that we're seeing play out across the country, and my governor might be a casualty of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good comment, because we've certainly seen the same thing happen in Chicago of, you know, the Daleys and the Madigans and the Burks giving way to cultural Marxists, you know, machine politicians giving way to real leftist ideologues. And this is sort of the warning that to people were issuing. You think that just getting rid of the machine guys means it's going to be a bright new day in Illinois? Well, what if you replace them with ideological Marxists? And that's what's happening. And it's not just in New York and Chicago. It's very interesting. Big city America.
Yeah. I mean, I remember watching the coverage of, you know, the riots in Minneapolis, or when CHOP was in Seattle, and I'd be watching CNN or something, and they would cut to city council meetings, right? And these were crazy people. I mean, these people were so obviously out of step with the mainstream of even their cities, that it made you scratch your head and say, like, how did this happen? Like, where you have all these DAs who refuse to prosecute crime, right? That's not necessarily what their voters want. And so we have to figure out, you know, why this is happening. Like, maybe it just sounds good, right? You look at places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. Why are we electing district attorneys? Why is the winner of the race for district attorney the person who promises to prosecute the least people? It's a very strange situation.
David Marcus, political reporter for the New York Post, author of Charade, The COVID Lies That Crushed a Nation. David, thanks for joining us, as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Annie joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
I don't miss when I come home in the evening, she ain't got nothing nice to say to me. I'll give you one particular evening. She said, you got the rent money yet? I said, no. I can't find no job. I'm going to get somebody to pay this rent. She said, I don't need you trying to find no job. Said, all she needed today was standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired. I've been walking all day. She said, that don't confront me as long as I get my rent money by next Friday. Now, you know, next Friday coming, I couldn't get the rent.
Out the door I went.
Thank you. And out the door I went.
We used to understand that you didn't have the rent money, then out the door you went.
You know, if I have to watch you dance.
That's not dancing. I was just sort of like shaking my head. This is what you do with blues music. Blues music is for people who can't dance.
You don't want to hear about my birth stories, but I have to sit and watch you dance.
No,
like that?
I'm just nodding my head at George Thorogood. That's not
no,
the same.
Your feet were moving. You were bobbing around. That was very uncomfortable.
How can you not one bourbon, one shot, one beer? It's not possible. The human being cannot resist bobbing his head to that song.
I sat very still.
George Thorogood in the story. One of the best shows I ever saw was at Ravinia a few years ago before, this is like way back when America was free. George Thorogood opening for Buddy Guy. And this is Thorogood, like he's 60, Buddy Guy's like 80.
Ravinia? That was a Ravinia crowd?
Oh, I'm a wine and cheese guy.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Did you bring your candelabras and
yeah, of course,
and
obviously. And, you know, they like to have the blues guys up there because all those North Shore types like to pretend that they're, you know, still down at the street level with the struggle.
Exactly.
Of course.
And they were
no,
all dancing probably like you just were, which is really just don't do that.
But I mean, this okay. is so didn't have the rent, out the door I went. We used to understand that. Back to the point here. I'm using Thorogood to illustrate. He sings about it. Not anymore. Jen Psaki yesterday responding to a question from Phil Wegman, realclearpolitics.com, on this new and improved surgical eviction moratorium.
What was the moment that the president became certain that he was on solid legal standing to move forward with this extension? And what was the argument, specific legal argument, that won out and changed his mind? Because yesterday he seemed to be weighing the two options.
Well, again, as I've been discussing,
The justification from the legal team is that this is a different moratorium. It's narrow. It's targeted at the highest, at the areas highest impacted. It is not an extension of the national moratorium that was struck down just 6 weeks ago.
Well, the legal team better communicate with the president, because he said the bulk of constitutional scholarship says that it's not likely to pass constitutional muster. But at a minimum, by the time it gets litigated, it will probably give some additional time while we're getting that $45 billion out to people who are behind in the rent who don't have the money. Is that how the rule of law works? I'm going to do something illegal, but by the time it's challenged and adjudicated, we'll have accomplished what we want to accomplish. Is that how it's supposed to work in a representative republic? Or are those the sort of authoritarian impulses that the left decried when it was President Trump trying to rule through executive order? For more on this and a few other topics, please be joined by our old friend Jonah Goldberg, co-founder and editor-in-chief of The Dispatch. Jonah, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to be back. And first of all, on the most important topic that I've listened to so far, it's not dancing if your hips aren't moving.
Mm. It's true. My hips are not moving. I have the same problem with my golf swing. Yeah.
And as a dad who does a good deal of daughter embarrassing car dancing, I defend your right to bob your head and move your shoulders and whatnot, but you can't. I don't think it's fair to say you were triggered, ma'am, because of his dancing, because it wasn't distracting. Like, I would be with you if he stood up and did anything with his hips.
Come on.
Short of that.
Ugh.
But now,
I'm sorry for the image. I'm sorry.
You're not helping.
Well, but I mean, John, just a point of order, though. When I'm head bobbing to George Thorogood, that is not the same as you card dancing to Christopher Cross.
Hey now.
I
despise Yacht Rock. It makes me want to smash the dude's guitar against the Delta House wall every time I hear it. And I will admit, I was bobbing along to Thurgood when I was listening to it on hold.
There you go. See, no human being can resist. Only Kristen McQuarrie can resist.
True.
Well, what about this larger matter I tried to illustrate in a fun way? This renewed surgical, not unconstitutional sort of eviction moratorium, because so many people who've seen their household incomes actually rise because of the distribution of funny money cannot pay month one of their rent post moratorium.
Yeah, it's just pure constitutional, unconstitutional lawlessness. And I think on paper, you can make the case that from the beginning, that was so. The idea that the CDC, some unelected arm of the federal government, could simply essentially nullify every private contract in the real estate market, you know, on its own, was a bit far-fetched. But at the same time, this often happens in American politics, where the government overreaches during a crisis, and then the Supreme Court weighs in after and says, yeah, that went too far. You can't do it again next time. That's what the Supreme Court basically did about this thing. It said, yeah, this thing's got to end. It's no good. It's sort of like, you know, the Supreme Court weighing in on habeas corpus after the Civil War. They said, you can't do this again. And Biden went and did it again. And it was just flatly unconstitutional the first time, but sort of exigent circumstances. To do it again is just pure, craven, pandering lawlessness. And I wish, and it gets at something that I've been banging my spoon on my high chair about for a really long time, where it used to be in this country, and this is the way the founding fathers thought, that everybody who took an oath to uphold the Constitution upheld the Constitution. So that goes for congressmen and senators. It goes for presidents. It goes for everybody. And we saw, you know, George W. Bush said that parts of the McCain-Feingold bill were unconstitutional and signed into law anyway, saying let the Supreme Court sort it out. At least he was ratifying Congress's will. Barack Obama went around the country saying that he literally couldn't do what the base wanted to do on DACA and all that stuff because he wasn't a king and he couldn't rewrite the Constitution. And then when Congress didn't act, he went and did it unilaterally anyway.
These are violations of your oath of office, which if you're president of the United States, you swear to uphold the Constitution. And the problem is no one talks in these terms about this kind of stuff. Everyone talks about what you can get away with rather than, you know, what actually the Constitution allows or doesn't allow. And, you know, Nancy Pelosi says Biden had to do it because she just thought it was too difficult to do something through Congress. Supreme Court told Congress, told the White House, told everybody, if you pass a law doing this, that's constitutional. But you cannot, by fiat, just simply nullify contracts around the country in perpetuity. And no one, and that they just, and Pelosi and everyone else said, well, that's just too difficult. Let's have the president do it with the stroke of a pen. And it's grotesque.
Yeah, I saw a story that Nancy Pelosi threatened to arrest any member of Congress who was carrying a pocket constitution. And I assumed it was the New York Times. It turned out it was the Babylon Bee, but I can't tell the difference between these outlets anymore.
There has been a problem for quite a while of being able to distinguish satire from reality in American politics. I will grant you that.
Well, speaking of Governor Cuomo's just wild response to all of these allegations, what is your take on what is next for him? I mean, I'm coming from Illinois. I am actually astonished that there is a chance he will not be impeached. I guess you have to be arrested like our governors on corruption charges. But what is the appetite there for him to stick around?
Yeah. And what, at some point, you got to let me know where you guys are. For a long time, you guys were batting 500 on governors going to jail.
Yeah.
And I don't know where you are now. But look, I think Cuomo's not going to resign unless he has to. And like Joe Biden saying unpleasant things about him and the New York Times saying unpleasant things about him, that doesn't matter to him. He's delusional. He's narcissistic. He's obsessed with himself. He thinks he can brazen it out. He's incredibly arrogant. The only way you're going to get him to resign is if it's some sort of like Nixon scenario where Nixon, you know, Nixon didn't want to resign. He wanted to brazen it out. But then it was explained to him, look, if you don't resign, the impeachment's going to happen and you're going to lose. And he was, and then, you know, then you, reality became a forcing mechanism on Nixon. And I think that's the only way you get Cuomo to resign is if it's clear to him he'll be impeached otherwise.
But I
just don't know if that's going to happen.
But not, and I want you to be honest here. How many times when you were back at National Review, you're in the office, you come to the office and Rich Lowry or William F. Buckley see you, embrace you, give you a kiss on the forehead, a little rub on the small of the back, because that was their way.
Or a tushy squeeze.
You know, back in that generation. You know, it's a generation and cultural thing, Andrew Cuomo's behavior. And apparently it's generational culture with respect to sending the sick back into nursing homes, too. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, we used to make jokes about playing Baron and the Milkmaid. You know, now it's playing the governor and the bodyguard. But, look, I think he's a pig. I believe these reports. They're really well verified. I mean, maybe not every single allegation is exactly as it happened, but it's so clear that the overwhelming evidence is he's guilty. He's a pig. And I think he should resign. I think the shamelessness of it is disgusting. I think it's fine by me if they impeach him for all of this kind of stuff. But what he did vis-a-vis COVID, just as on a moral scale, is much worse. And I'm willing to give him a little bit of a pass on sending all these old people to their death in nursing homes, because that could be just a grave error. But then he compounded it by concealing it, by playing with data, by denying it, all to sell books and to maintain his political ambitions. And that's grotesque, because in a pandemic, you're supposed to have different states have different, you know, all the states have their sovereign. They get to do what they want. Laboratories of democracy. The best thing about that during a pandemic is that you have experimentation. You learn best practices. Part of learning that stuff is not just reporting about what works, but also reporting honestly about what didn't work. And he refused to pass on really important data and information in a timely way about how he had been responsible for killing large numbers of people. And he hid it all so he could crow in a book about what a great job he did and fuel his ambitions to be president one day. And that's the kind of thing in a more morally ordered society people would stay clear of Cuomo for fear of getting hit by some of the penumbras of the lightning bolt that took him out. I mean, because this is a guy, you know, who, that is a profane, evil thing that he did vis-a-vis COVID. And the stuff that he did vis-a-vis women is grotesque, but, you know, killing lots of grandmas and covering it up just still strikes me as worse.
Yeah, no, you're right. There are definitely layers to the depravity. I wanted to get your take as well on something that, of course, was underreported, this report from House Republicans as to the origins of the COVID-19 virus. The report, the top line is, preponderance of evidence indicates that the virus came from that lab in Wuhan. And the importance, the underlying importance of understanding the origin of the virus from America's perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is entirely possible, maybe even probable, that this was some sort of lab accident of some kind. I never thought the sort of more fever swampy claim that this was a deliberate bioweapon of some kind made any sense, because why would you unleash it on your own people first? But the idea that this was, you know, grotesque incompetence and malfeasance and then a cover-up seems as plausible as any other theory and more plausible than a lot of them. And I don't think that the Republican report, given just the partisanship on all sides and all this kind of stuff and how much that narrative matters to the people who are writing it, is going to change a lot of minds. But I also just fear that, you know, we're never going to have a globally dispositive answer to this. I think we should still try and find it. And I think, you know, China could do a lot if they weren't, you know, if they're not lying, if they're telling the truth about all this, they could do a lot to clear the air, release all sorts of stuff that they took down and the rest. But they're behaving like they're guilty. And I think that alone is useful as a matter of sort of public information. If again, you can't finally get a real answer because China's not going to cooperate. But if what China does in response to these calls for an investigation is start saying, oh, this really came out of Fort Detrick or whatever, I think for a lot of the world, that's a sign that China is basically admitting that they're guilty and they're trying to project a different narrative out there. And that alone is useful. But, you know, the general trajectory we have in foreign policy for the next 5 to 50 years, so long as the Chinese Communist Party is around, is it's going to be a debate in America between whether we should be smart hawks or dumb hawks. But hawkishness is just baked into the case. It's going to be an adversarial relationship with China for a long time to come.
Yeah, and if at minimum this will perhaps have a chilling effect on working and helping finance research by Chinese scientists who may well be great scientists but are answerable to the Chinese communists in charge, there'll be a lot more scrutiny over some of this, these discussions that, for example, Rand Paul and Dr. Fauci have been having in public. Jonah Goldberg, co-founder and editor-in-chief of The Dispatch. Jonah, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thanks.
Jonah Goldberg joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy J. This morning is, once again, Kristen McQueary, former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor. And Kristen, the business magazine, the anti-business business magazine for Chicago, which is Crain's, pro-rent-seeking, anti-entrepreneur, anti-free market business magazine in Chicago, Crain's Chicago Business. Remarkable. They just published a survey that will completely evade their understanding of what people think about the quality of living and working in Chicago. And won't you share some of those results?
Well, first of all, I subscribe to Crain's and I rather enjoy it. So
why? Here, what do you enjoy about it?
Here are two. Mm-hmm. Well, because there's no real business sections left in either of the other two newspapers, for one. There are two pieces that sort of correlate. recently they look at, again at the downtown office vacancy rate in downtown Chicago, which rose to nearly 20% in the quarter ending June 30th, which is the highest that has been tracked in 15 years of data collection. So, I mean, there's no question downtown is still suffering immensely, and who knows when and if it will bounce back due to COVID and lockdowns and people leaving. A secondary part of the latest edition of Cranes is a survey that they do called the Chicago Index, and they measure just how people feel about the direction of the city, different issues in the city. And according to this survey, which also ended at the end of July, interestingly, people have a 90. These are Chicagoans, Chicago proper, 96% approval rating of the Chicago Fire Department, which is just interesting because you hear so much bashing of public safety. 43% approval of the Chicago Police Department, which is just slightly less than the approval rating of the mayor, who had an only. Well, she had a 25% approval rating, strongly or somewhat approve of her performance, compared to a WGN poll that ended June 1st, where her approval rating was at 48%. So they also.
So wait, Lightfoot's approval rating in this survey is 25%?
Of approve or strongly approve. Yes.
Just 25%.
Yes.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And they also just ask residents about their overall views of the city. Interesting. 76% said that Chicago is a good place to visit.
Yes.
But only 51% said that it's a good place to live. So yes to Navy Pier, but don't live here. Come visit. But only 51% said it's a good place to live. And only 28% indicated that Chicago is headed in the right direction, with 72% saying that things are on the wrong track.
Hmm. So it's fascinating. So 28%, only 28% think Chicago's headed in the right direction, and yet the majority, or at least the majority who vote, will come out in 2023 and keep us on the same direction.
I mean, that's...
Right?
We love to give our politicians second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, ten chances. So it depends on who ends up, you know, in a runoff with Lori Lightfoot.
But I don't think you can make a determination until you've given at least a century.
You think?
Yeah, I think a century is a fair probationary period. So we're sort of bumping up against the last Republican mayor of Chicago, Big Bill Thompson, who, by the way, also was, you know, a tool of the mob. So I don't know. Maybe we need to go further back than the 20s. But here's the... here's the thing, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Do you find Chicago, and this is a question for the suburbanites and exurbanites as well, do you find Chicago an attractive place to live and or work if you live and or work in Chicago?
Or visit. If you're from the suburbs, do you still come downtown? Do you, I remember last summer, reading, I think it was a letter to the editor of at the Tribune, someone who talked about finally coming down for an anniversary dinner, and I think they went to, you know, one of the premier steakhouses until they realized that the
Sizzler.
Steak probably a steakhouse that's no longer open since everyone's struggling, until they realized that the steakhouse had hired security, which a security person was kind of pacing in front of the entryway armed. And they thought, well, this is dumb. Why are we down here? If this is so dangerous and there could be a breakout of looting or vandalism at any point, you know, we won't be back.
Mm-hmm.
So that was last summer. I'm wondering if things are looking up.
Well, also the police have a 43% approval rating in that survey.
Yeah.
43%. That's pretty low. It's interesting because that's against the backdrop of this video that was posted by Alderman Ray Lopez in the 15th Ward, you know, the little village. This is police having problems arresting this individual. And you have multiple officers on the scene. They're trying to wrestle him to the ground and put him in cuffs. Other people are intervening, assaulting the police while they're trying to arrest this guy.
Oh, geez.
And it looks like a Keystone Cops situation. But here's Alderman Ray Lopez's comment on this video that you may have seen. I'll retweet it. Can't follow in a car, can't chase on foot, can't tase an armed suspect, won't prosecute the arrested. Law enforcement in Chicago is an absolute joke, thanks to Lightfoot and Fox, and not a parent in sight until someone is shot after reaching for a gun instead of the handcuffs.
Oof.
But, I mean, you know, Ray Lopez, here's the other thing, though, too. You know, he's one of the 50 aldermen that are mainly trained SEALs and seat occupiers, seat fillers, like you see at, you know, award shows. What's the city council doing about it? What's Ray Lopez doing about it other than tweeting and having, you know, profane exchanges with Lightfoot? What does that accomplish?
I like that he pushes back.
Well, I like he pushes back, too. But I'm sorry, that's not enough. That's just another version of press release politics
for me. Well, he's informing the public more, and he is willing to defend law enforcement, which sadly is a treacherous perch to be on in this city.
But that's baseline stuff.
Well,
that's like oath of office stuff. What else are you doing? I mean, the bar is so low that Ray Lopez, oh, he could be the mayor. He's going to challenge Lloyd Lightfoot. How exciting is that? Not very. Not very to me. Big deal.
If there were more of him, it would be a more active body. And his ward, just for your listeners, it's the ward no one wants. It is pieces of back of the yards, Englewood, West Englewood, and it is the chunks of pieces of the city during the last remap that no one wanted to represent because it's high crime rates, difficult constituency, and I think there's value, even if you just have one person who is continually speaking up.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying there's no value. I'm saying it's not enough. I'm saying it's not anywhere near enough. We give people credit for doing the most basic of things, like saying the antagonism towards the police as the institution and the hamstringing of police is lunacy. Wow. Thank you so much. What needs to happen is more common sensocrats, to borrow a phrase from my friend Scott Chalady, need to make their views known and perhaps fill some of these office spaces. But it's a sad commentary that statements from Ray Lopez are big news because nobody else is, very few other people are saying anything like it. Maybe Napolitano in the 41st as well, but that's it, right? So again, quality of life in Chicago. Only 51% say it's a nice place to live. My new saying about Chicago, really, it's really Chicagoland, is it's a nice place to plan a golf trip in the summer. Because we have so many great golf courses in Chicagoland. So it's not, you know, spend 3 days, maybe a week, hit some of the golf courses, and then go back to a nicer place to live. I don't know. Maybe people are getting hip to that reality. Only one in four say Chicago's on the right track. But again, make no mistake, that doesn't mean we'll change direction.
We might change direction, but we will get more of the same.
Well, that's what we got with Lori Lightfoot.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same thing at the state level. 85% of people think Illinois is on the wrong track. Super majorities of the wrong trackers.
Right.
Basically combine Republicans and machine Democrats given over now to Marxist ideologues. Don't change track. The only thing we haven't tried, I'll say it one more time, just for my own enjoyment. The one thing we haven't tried.
Because everyone does exactly what you say. Go ahead.
No, nobody. I mean, what's funny, you know, people, this is great. So, you know, people, you know, like Pravda, he's curmudgeon, decrying Chicago. It's a great city, this and that. So am I the reason 75% of people think that Chicago's on the wrong track because everybody's listening to me and they think, oh, yeah, gosh, I didn't know that. Of course not. It's ridiculous. But you're not helping. But at the same time, I'm just describing what is. Oh, okay, sure.
Oh, I got that all the time at the editorial page.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's all your fault.
We didn't do enough cheerleading for the city.
Exactly.
And the state.
It's simply a marketing problem.
Right.
It's not a public safety problem. It's not a fiscal problem, just a marketing problem. It's all it is. We just need more Chamber of Commerce ciphers in public office and the press corps. That's all. Okay, sure. The one thing we haven't tried in Illinois, in Chicago, in 100 years, conservative reform. Conservative reform. Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Mitch Daniels in Indiana. We have had nothing like that. And when there has been opportunities to go that direction, we've rejected it. And obviously I'm including whatever constitutes the remainder of the Republican Party. The one thing you want to do, you want to talk about right track, wrong track. The entire political ruling class, the rent-seeking business community, all of the civic institutions, obviously the comm shop for the left, the Chicago Press Corps and Springfield Political Press Corps, they're all the wrong trackers. You have this opportunity to go on the right track, and time again, it's refused. And they say, oh, only one in four people think we're on the right track.
Right. I know. I know. And I've covered enough elections to know that there have been alternatives offered. There have been so many chances, both in the state house, the legislature, the city, and they can't even get elected because there's just no appetite for anyone who doesn't have a D next to their name.
Or somebody who is just there to do the bidding of the Ds with an R next to their name. And so to wit, Jim Edgar, who is a terrible governor, by the way, because he's a genteel man and a teetotaler and he's got a nice haircut. People were, oh, boy, we need to go back to the era of Jim Edgar when we had Republican governorship. The reason we turned the state over to Marxists is because of Republicans like Jim Edgar. And everybody associated with him. Knuckleheads. The inaugural. Oh, you ready for this? The inaugural Paul Simon Jim Edgar Statesmanship Award goes to the 11 Republicans who broke the budget stalemate in 2017. When the hapless Rauner was the governor, another Democrat impersonating a Republican for the purposes of political advancement. So he had something to else to put on his epitaph besides I made a lot of money. Congratulations. 11 Republicans get this Paul Simon Award. Jim Edgar, the most one of the most courageous things he's ever seen in Illinois. What did the 11 Republicans do? General Assembly, one senator, 10 state representatives. Most of whom are gone now, enjoying the pension that you're financing. What do they do? What do they have the courage to do?
They raise taxes.
Right.
But they got stuff in exchange, like pension consolidation or something of downstate districts and like a tax credit for data centers or something. They got stuff for that tax hike.
Yeah, I'm not reading that sarcasm. I said required vision and courage. It was effective. It was important. Put Illinois in a better track. Is Illinois in a better track now, 4 years later?
Well, we've been rescued by federal money. So in that regard.
Was it before the pandemic?
No, of course not.
Is it going to be coming out of this?
No. No. Our pension liabilities increased dramatically since that tax increase. We had a continuation of terribly unbalanced budgets that we keep trying to patch over with marijuana and gambling and you name it.
Big government, you know, toadies to the Marxist Republicans. That's what you have. Cowards, men and women without chests. And now you have no Republican Party. I mean, there's with all due respect to Darren Bailey, who's made some stands, and I appreciate and respect him. Is there a point to participating in the gubernatorial race next year? People, even from Illinois, even if you're not a dual citizen, as it were, would be better spent helping Ron DeSantis win re-election in Florida, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, to your point.
That's what I'm going to do.
To your point about those survey results, and then maybe you can take a couple calls. Maybe this is the biggest sign that people have just given up. Great place to visit, not a great place to live, not a great place to raise kids. And there's just a complete lack of engagement.
Susan in Highland Park.
Hi. I was a resident of Chicago up until about 2017. I kind of track this back to when Daley left. He left no budget for ROM, and I started to see things trend back then in the wrong direction, like lack of simple things. Planting the flowers, gone. Trash piling up. Buildings all over. A festival every weekend.
Chalk outlines. Yeah, right.
It's chaos on a stick. I packed up and left. I'm more cosmopolitan. I'm not thrilled to be in the suburbs, but after watching the apocalypse for the last year and a half from my suburban residence, I've been downtown. I go when I need to go, but it's like in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Get me in and out. And it's something in the air, Dan. I can't describe it. When I drive through, I'm like, this feels weird.
No, I agree. Thanks for the call, Susan. I've said it before, you know, walking around, like I walk around Streeterville or the Gold Coast or Old Town, whatever, even walking around those areas that are supposed to be like the ritzy areas, the entertainment districts and so on and so forth, it's different. It's different. Go to restaurants around town, different neighborhoods. It's different. There's no question about it. And anybody you talk to who spent any time in the city and still is there experiencing it, they know. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Kristen, it's always great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Hey, you know, I've been going to IMTS, the biggest trade show in the country, for 30 years, which is always at McCormick Place. Of course, it got canceled last year. But, you know, a lot of the exhibitors and the people who go there talk about, you talk to these guys, oh, I love Chicago. I love coming here. This is such a beautiful city, blah, blah, blah. And then typically what I'll do is start giving them statistics on crime, the pension situation, education, and everything else related to the city. And most of these people sit there with, you know, a lot of times, I mean, literally with their mouth hanging open, it's like, you got to be kidding me. No, this is what we pay in property taxes, and this is what it's go for and what it goes for. And, of course, the last thing I tell them is, you know, while you're enjoying the city, whatever you do when you leave McCormick Place, don't go south to go have some fun because, you know, you're in the hood and you may not get out of it alive. You guys have a good one.
Thanks, Greg. Karen and Beecher.
Hey, good morning. And, Kristen, yeah, I want to tell you are my new heroine and not the kind that you shoot up in your veins.
With an E at the end, yeah. Yeah, right, yeah.
Thank you.
But anyway, okay, so I grew up in Roseland. Lived in Lakeview 7 years after I graduated from college. I have a kid who lives, my son lives in Lincoln Park. I've called you about him before, Dan. Even though we live out here in Beecher, both of my kids are very urban. My son wanted to live in the city of Chicago. I've got a daughter out in Boston. But my son is looking for anywhere but Chicago to live because he's got nothing in common with anybody there in Lincoln Park. And he's like, why do I keep spending all of my money? Why are my tax dollars? And then Sunday when I go up there to go hang with him, I'm thinking, why am I spending all my tax dollars to Lori Lightfoot?
Yeah, Karen.
So he's looking for anywhere his company has another office to get the hell out.
Thanks for the call, Karen. Yeah, there's a reckoning coming with Gen Z, with the young people not moving to the cities. Joel Kotkin had a good piece in Tablet about the battle looming for big city America. You might want to check out.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning is former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQuarrie. And outgoing New York City Mayor Warren Wilhelm was on one of the cheerleading cable news programs for the left, talking about the vaccine mandate effectively he has imposed in New York City. If you don't get vaccinated, you don't get to go to restaurants, health clubs, shows, and the like. Hey, you know, he tried to do it the nice way.
Unless we want to run the risk of going back to restrictions and having our freedom taken away and people losing their jobs again, it's really clear what we have to do. People have to get vaccinated. And we had a long period where it was voluntary. There was incentives. It was compassionate and kind. But now it's time to get a little blunter about the fact that everyone needs to get vaccinated for the good of their family, their community, their country. And a lot of people, I think, are close to that point, but they needed a little more of a push. So here's a clear message.
Just a little push. A little push. having their freedoms taken away, so they don't have their freedoms taken away. You're pointing a gun at my head and say, get vaccinated or your freedoms will be taken away. Isn't that the definition of taking away my freedom?
Well, also, I saw a headline somewhere where New York City, like many places, many of the unvaccinated are minorities. So the headline was, de Blasio blocks minorities from being able to use gyms and go to restaurants or something. That's one way to look at it.
That isn't one way to look at it, and the numbers bear that out. Are you ready for this PSA? Here's how the state of Arkansas is appealing to black residents of Arkansas to get vaccinated.
I'm came to a screeching halt. You have to understand, I'm a hustler. I'm a legit entrepreneur. I sell things. I come in contact with people all the time. I have to stay safe. I didn't have a choice but to trust the vaccine. Because if you live the type of lifestyle that I live, you out here in these streets and you hustling, an entrepreneur like me, why not do it safely? So I want everybody to take this seriously. Take a shot at staying healthy. Get the vaccine.
Well, I like the soft music.
A gold chain clad black man saying, I'm a hustler, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm out on the streets selling things.
Vacuum cleaners, Dan.
Leaning on the hood of a tricked out vintage car. The bigotry of low expectations is not so soft. I mean, that is a remarkable caricature of a black man in America. A remarkably denigrating caricature, as far as I'm concerned. That's the appeal by the state of Arkansas. Okay. This is where it's going. this is how you're going to run it. This is what you're going with, state of Arkansas. Okay, sure. For more on the vaccine mandate and associated propaganda, pleased to be joined again by Dr. Alan Moy, pulmonologist, also the vice president of the John Paul II Medical Research Institute in Iowa. Dr. Moy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
You have written that the vax mandates are medically futile. Why are they medically futile?
Well, it's medically futile because you can never be able to achieve containment of this infection, and for several reasons. But essentially, this vaccine, it was designed, as we have talked before, Dan, using a subunit approach where you are trying to immunize the population with a fraction of this virus that is weak. And it requires boosters and a virus that is dynamically mutating over time, and simply trying to vaccinate the population with this type of vaccine is just putting pressure on the virus to adapt. And so with all those reasons, you can never achieve herd immunity alone with this type of vaccine. So it's medically futile to try to impose vaccine mandates on the population. And that is that if you really want to push the vaccine and there are concerns about the safety, you should really do it more targetedly in those people who may be at increased risk, to allow the remaining younger people, the healthy people, to eventually acquire natural immunity, which would decrease the pressure on creating these variants.
The news out of Israel is the antibodies in the early vaccinated, those who were vaccinated early on, have declined by up to 40%. So we see the vax protection waning over time, and thus, you know, all this discussion of the booster shot as well. But Dr. Robert Malone, who's credited as one of those on the forefront of developing mRNA vaccines, suggests this antibody attenuation should have people thinking about halting the push for vaccinations. Where do you come down on this?
So I think that there are, I would agree, maybe for a different reason. When the, as I've written before and we've talked before, the people who are at the highest risk, the elderly, the people with comorbidities, with who have obesity, diabetes, other chronic diseases, their immunity will wane in a short period of time, particularly if they do not achieve T cell immunity, which is well known in those cases. And so, as their immune protection wanes, they're vulnerable, just as vulnerable as anyone else who is unvaccinated. Now, what Dr. Malone is asserting is that there is this phenomenon called antibody development enhancement. And antibody development enhancement it's a complicated phenomena, and there's really a lack of consensus exactly what that is. But I think there is, in Israel, there are serious cases of the COVID emerging due to the Delta variant. And so the question is, what's causing it? Is it due to the waning of their immunity, or is it because the people who just got recently vaccinated is priming them to have a more serious infection, which is the classic definition of antibody development enhancement, and it's very difficult to tease that out. But what is probably pretty clear is that the people's antibodies and their immunity is being waned from this vaccine. The new variants are going to be quite different than what the original vaccine was designed to do, because the vaccine is designed based on the Wuhan spike protein. And as over time, these variants are changing in the spike protein biology. And so they're becoming less effective over time.
So do you recommend people who have had COVID get the vaccine?
People who have had COVID and recovered should nowhere ever get this vaccine, because the vaccine has in no way the same level of protection as those who recovered. And the reason is that when you're exposed and recovered from the virus, the virus contains more than just the spike protein. There are four major antigens on that virus. And so when you recover, you have redundant protection against all of those different antigens. And there are some of those antigens have had some conservation among these variants. So you have redundancy. And also you have something called respiratory mucosal immunity that you do not achieve with the vaccine, because you've inhaled this virus into your respiratory tract. It's eliciting what's called respiratory mucosal immunity. You can think of it as the respiratory tract as a compartment, a structural, anatomical, and functional immune compartment, which protects the lungs and the respiratory tract from injury and also from transmission. That is why people who have this vaccine are seeing levels of virus in their nasal pharynx just as high as those who are unvaccinated, because of that reason.
And so for those who were vaccinated, like high-risk category or not, but they were vaccinated and perhaps they're similarly situated to those individuals that were studied in Israel, for example, the antibodies are waning. Is it time to get the booster or not? Pfizer says yes. Fauci says no. The World Health Organization says no third jabs until more people the world over are vaccinated. How should people make an assessment on the booster?
Well, I think people need to be aware that that the more times you get boosts, there is the
the increased risk that you're being dosed with a spike protein that gets circulated into your bloodstream, and there's the risk of spike protein toxicity. We don't know that. And so what's going to be the incidence of that? What we do know is that it is a race between time between when you're getting immunized with this vaccine. There are two processes that are in competition. One is to trigger an immune response with the spike protein, and the other is that the spike protein gets circulated into your bloodstream. And when it does that, it is turning on any cells that are activating your blood cells, your platelets, and your vascular cells. And so there's increased risk of clots and increased risk of bleeding. So if you are getting challenged all the time with this vaccine, there's a risk that you can increase your risk of clot formation, myocardial infarction, stroke, pulmonary embolism. That's going to be the potential risk. So what we should be doing is start thinking about treatment and repurposing drugs that have already been known to be very effective in treating patients early on with COVID, particularly those at high risk. Given early can reduce the risk of mortality, hospitalization. And so we're not doing that, and we should be emphasizing and doing that. Instead, we are getting censorship and from preventing doctors from doing that type of care.
Well, you're at the intersection of science and faith, Vice President of the John Paul II Medical Research Institute, Dr. Moy. And so I want you to react to the New York Archdiocese warning priests not to grant religious vaccine exemptions. In the memo, Pope Francis has made it very clear it is morally acceptable to take any of the vaccines and said we have the moral responsibility to get vaccinated. Cardinal Dolan has said the same.
So that's where I disagree with the Pope and with the hierarchy. And the Congregation of Doctrine of Faith, which came out from the Vatican, made it very clear that these vaccines should be accepted voluntarily. So if someone has a moral objection or for whatever reason, because these vaccines were using aborted fetal cells, then they should voluntarily decide whether they want to take these vaccines depending upon their own health and make a very informed decision.
Let me ask you another question in the same area. Governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, imposed a mask mandate for K-12 schools yesterday, all schools, public and private. One of the diocesan school superintendents, Joliet, said they will comply for the 2021-2022 academic year. If you were advising the Chicago Archdiocese or the Joliet Diocese with respect to schools and complying with the state mask mandate for K-12, what would your advice be?
Eliminate the mask mandate for kids because there is no evidence that the masks can prevent transmission. The children are at low risk of getting disease and transmitting the virus. Because the children have very low levels of the receptor, what's called the ACE2 receptor, to get sick and transmit the virus. Instead, it has greater harm than good in terms of causing them to have anxiety, mental illness, increased risk of suicide, and it also affects their ability to get proper amount of oxygen, increases their carbon dioxide level, increases the risk of transmitting bacterial infections. It's insane to impose young children to wear masks.
Dr. Alan Moy, he is a pulmonologist, and he's the vice president of the John Paul II Medical Research Institute. Dr. Moy, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
Take care. He joined us on the turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan, and in for Amy this morning, former Chicago Tribune editorial page editor Kristen McQuarrie. And Kristen, two of the worst people in the world who are not dictators or war criminals are that Meghan Markle and that Prince Harry. There's two of the worst people in the world.
I'm reserving judgment.
Awful people. The intersection of Meghan Markle and the critical race theory hustle that has taken hold in so many quarters in America, education, not just educational institutions, but also culturally, as we know, corporate America. Remember Ibram Kendi, How to Be an Anti-Racist, which is to say how to be a racist. $10 million from Jack Dorsey to back his Boston University Center for Anti-Racist Studies. This guy's a celebutante masquerading as an intellectual and being underwritten by business people and other celebrities masquerading as intellectuals. Don't think so. Ibram Kendi's Instagram account, to celebrate the 40th birthday of my friend Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, I'm donating 40 minutes of mentorship time to a woman reentering the workforce. Will you join me?
That's what she asked for her birthday. Did you see the ad?
No.
Melissa McCarthy, whom I love, from that's the actress, right? From Bridesmaids and
the
comedian.
The fat one.
Well, she's not anymore. She's lost a ton of weight.
Right.
But she does this. It is funny. This kickoff for Meghan's birthday, where she asks 40 friends to spend 40 minutes trying to help a woman reengage in the workforce.
Yeah. I know. I understand the performative identitarian pablum.
I'm just bringing it's with
no,
the
I know.
Gram. It's on the gram.
It's on the gram.
Just
no, I know.
Trying to bring
and,
you up to speed and, with what the kids are saying.
And this is where the leading light of racial studies of combating racism in America finds himself. I mean, that's how he's described by the political entertainment press corps, and who can distinguish between the two? Ibram Kendi, Meghan Markle, Melissa McCarthy.
Chris Cuomo.
They can go to lunch on Jack Dorsey's $10 million.
Sure.
It's remarkable. But I just they need to continue to expose these people for the dilettantes that they are. Unserious people, serious hustlers. And so it's necessitated that, along with Nicole Hannah-Jones, now at Howard University, doing what Ibram Kendi is doing at Boston U, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of the 1619 Project, New York Times-backed. Because of them, there's been a response. I mean, it's appropriate. It's necessary. Of 1776, the 1776 Unites, Bob Woodson's group that we've spoken to Bob many times and other scholars that are part of his group, as well as curriculum being advanced both in sort of op-ed form, places like Real Clear Politics, as well as at one of the few universities that actually still believes that a university is supposed to be a free marketplace of ideas, supposed to be intellectually rigorous. There's no such thing as safe spaces from substantive discussion. That would be Hillsdale College up there in Hillsdale, Michigan. And they also have a 1776 curriculum, which I believe we used to call just history. To discuss that, we're pleased to be joined by Kathleen O'Toole, Assistant Provost for K-12 Education at Hillsdale College. Kathleen, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the K-12 1776 curriculum that Hillsdale has promulgated. Give us details.
Sure. Well, it's a content-rich curriculum. It tells the whole story of America, the tragedies and the triumphs. It's full of primary sources. It's full of tips for teachers, key terms, maps, dates, names. And so far, we've done the founding and the Civil War, the two things which we as a country are especially confused about right now. And it's 2,400 pages long, and it's absolutely free on k12.hillsdale.edu.
Well, there you go. So this is for maybe people that are trying to do some homeschooling or pod schooling or just trying to deprogram their kid from the government school they sent them to.
Yeah, and for teachers. Listen, teachers are looking for quality resources that they can believe in, that they can count on. And rather than, you know, have a particular or political view about questions related to the founding and the Civil War in our country, we just give people the tools to investigate those questions themselves. This is a great thing for parents and teachers alike.
Is it based on the 1776 Unites platform? Because, Dan, wasn't there a time when there was going to be curriculum?
There is. 1776 Unites has also put out a scholarship. Ian Rowe, who ran charter schools in the Bronx, it was sort of the impetus behind that. That was sort of his deal as a former educator and administrator. But, yeah, so there's a lot that's being put into the arena because of the flim-flammery from 1619 and intellectual frauds like Ibram Kendi. That's correct, right, Kathleen?
Yeah, that's right. This curriculum wasn't created in response to anything. This is just what we do at Hillsdale College and have been doing for over 175 years. We advise and provide curriculum to charter schools. There are dozens of them across the country. And this is the curriculum in those schools and in the history and government departments here at the college. We just thought it was time to make it available to everyone because the debate is raging and there are a lot of people who are confused about how to go about figuring out what's really true.
Well, one of my former colleagues, Clarence Page, longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial board member, has written about this as well. He is a widely known liberal, but supports what Woodson has been doing. And in a recent column, I'm just going to kind of paraphrase here what Clarence Page understands is needed. The untold and underappreciated stories of resilience and success that African Americans have achieved despite the obstacles and degradation of slavery and Jim Crow. And he goes on to say that in schools, we need to do more to write about how, this is Clarence Page again, patriotism is not for whites only, even though some of my brethren and sisters too often think it is, for all the moral shortcomings of our nation's slavery-tolerating founders like Thomas Jefferson. They also provided the rhetorical and constitutional tools that leaders like Martin Luther King Jr. and Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall used effectively to fight for our liberation. So it's just good to see. This was in a column, I think, just a couple days ago. But there is a pushback, and obviously you are trying to get that out front to what is sort of this pivot that we're seeing as it relates to history taught in schools.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There are a lot of people right now talking about how history should be taught in K-12 schools who have already made up their mind about the nature of American history. There are big questions surrounding the founding. You know, how was it that Thomas Jefferson wrote all men are created equal and then also owned slaves? That's a puzzle. Same thing with the Civil War. You know, how was it that slavery persisted in our nation for so long? And those are difficult questions. Those are questions of justice. And our view is the way that you begin to answer those questions is by really studying history in its fullness. Not making up your mind in advance and then giving students a narrative, a politicized narrative that brings them over to your point of view.
You know, just generally speaking, what's happening in higher education has been happening for a long time. It's perhaps increased in pace, and it was moving pretty quickly, but increased in pace during the pandemic. James Hankins, who's a professor of history at Harvard University, perhaps the last professor of history at Harvard that will ever make sense again. He writes recently, the more credentialed people are, the more they cling to their membership in the tribe of the soi-disant educated. Do you like my French pronunciation there?
That was pretty impressive.
Educated people don't trust their own intelligence. They trust what they've been taught by authorities approved by educators. this is because their knowledge of what the right authorities say defines who they are and gives them status in the community. As Chesterton pointed out, most of what we think we know is taken on trust. And so that what you're talking about there in terms of the debate on these matters, the investigation, discussion, debate, this is what's lacking, because I think of this dynamic that Professor Hankins is describing, and I think it needs to be put front and center to the so-called educated about just what an echo chamber they live in, and they should perhaps stop spending so much time seeking status, a la Nicole Hannah-Jones, and more time advancing our understanding of matters.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The a really excellent teacher, whether it's someone like James Hankins or an excellent history or government teacher in a great classical K-12 school, it's a beautiful thing to see. The teacher is the vehicle through which the students come to understand complicated material. And the story of America is a complicated story. It's one that requires someone who has the content knowledge, but then also has the freedom and the ability to lead students through an investigation based on primary sources. That's the kind of thing that happens when students and teachers are really, truly pursuing the truth. And it's happening in classical schools all over the country, and sometimes it happens at the college level, too.
It does at Hillsdale College. Kathleen O'Toole, Assistant Provost for K-12 Education at Hillsdale. Go to k12.hillsdale.edu to download their 1776 curriculum, available for, as she said, parents, students, and teachers alike. And while you're at it, sign up for Imprimis, too, their excellent monthly newsletter. Kathleen O'Toole, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
And she joined us on the Turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.